Chapter 29. I put the phone down on Monroe, and Devereaux came back into the office immediately. Maybe she had been watching a light on the switchboard. She said,
"Well?"
"No quarantine patrols. No one has left Kellum since Monroe arrived."
"He would say that, though, wouldn't he?"
"And he's not smelling anything. He thinks the perp is not on the base."
"Ditto."
I nodded. Smoke and mirrors. Politics and the real world. Utter confusion. I said, "You want to get lunch?" She said,
"After."
"After what?"
"You have a problem to deal with. The McKinney cousins are out on the street. They're waiting for you. And they've brought reinforcements."
Devereaux led me across the corridor to a dim corner room with windows in two walls. The view across Main Street was empty, nothing happening, but the view north toward the T-junction showed four figures, my two old friends, plus two more similar guys, dirt, hair, fur, and ink. They were standing around in the wide area where the two roads met, hands in pockets, kicking the dirt. Doing nothing at all. My first reaction was a kind of dumbfounded admiration. A headbutt is a serious blow, especially one of mine. To be walking and talking just a few hours later was impressive. My second reaction was annoyance with myself. I had been too gentle, too new in town, too reluctant, too proper. Too ready to see mitigating circumstances in sheer animal stupidity. I looked at Devereaux and asked, "What do you want me to do?" She said,
"You could apologize and make them go away."
"What's my second choice?"
"You could let them hit you first. Then I could arrest them for unprovoked assault. I'd love to get the chance to do that."
"They won't hit me at all if you're there."
"I'll stay out of sight."
"I'm not sure I want to do either thing."
"One or the other, Reacher. Your choice."
I stepped out to Main Street like some guy in an old movie. There should have been music playing. I turned right and faced north. I stood still. The four guys saw me. They showed a moment of surprise, and then a moment of warm anticipation. They formed up in a side-to-side line, all four of them, strung out west to east, about 4 feet apart. They all took a step toward me, and then they all stopped and waited. There were two trucks parked on the Kellum Road, behind them and to the right. There was the brush-painted pickup I had seen before, and in front of it was another one just as bad. I walked on, like a fish toward a net. The sun was about as high as it was going to get in March. The air was warm. I could feel heat on my skin. I could feel the road surface under the soles of my shoes. I put my hands in my pockets. Nothing in there except most of the roll of quarters I had gotten in the diner. I closed my fist around the paper tube. A $5 punch, less what I had spent on the phone. I walked on and stopped 10 feet from the skirmish line. The two guys I had met before were on the left. The silent mastermind was on the outside, and the alpha dog was in second position. Both of them had noses like spoiled eggplants. Both of them had two black eyes. Both of them had crusted blood on their lips. Neither one of them exhibited much in the way of balance or focus. Right of the alpha dog was a guy slightly smaller than the others, and next to him was a big guy in a biker vest. I looked at the alpha dog and said, "This is your plan." He didn't answer. I said, "Four guys. Is that all?" He didn't answer. I said, "I was told there were dozens of you." No answer. But I guess logistics and communications were difficult, so you settled on a lighter force, quickly assembled and rapidly deployed, which is very up-to-date, actually. You should go to the Pentagon and sit in on some seminars. You'd feel right at home with their thinking. The new guy, second from the right, was drunk. He had a low-level buzz going on. It was oozing from his pores. I could practically smell it. Beer for breakfast. Maybe with chasers. A decade-long diet, judging by the look of him. So he would be slow to react, and then wild and unaimed afterward. No big problem. The new guy with the biker vest was carrying some kind of back pain, low down, base of his spine. I could tell because he was standing with his pelvis rolled forward, taking the pressure off. Some kind of rupture or strain. A dozen possible causes. He was a country boy. He could have lifted a bale or fallen off a horse. No major threat. He would defeat himself. One enthusiastic swing and all kinds of things would tear loose inside. He would hobble away like a cripple. By which time, his drunken friend would already be down. And the other two were already in no kind of good shape. The two I knew, the two that knew me. The alpha dog was slightly on my left, and I'm a right-handed fighter. He was practically volunteering. Overall, an encouraging situation. I said, "It's a shame one of you isn't bigger, or two or three of you, or all of you, actually." No answer. I said, "But, hey, a plan's a plan. Did it take long to work out?" No answer. I said, "You know what we used to say about plans up at West Point?"
"What?"
"Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth." No answer. No movement. I unwrapped my hand from around the roll of quarters. I wasn't going to need them. I took my hands out of my pockets. I said, "The problem with light forces is if things go bad, they go real bad, real quick. Look at what happened in Somalia. So you should think very carefully about this choice. You're at a fork in the road here. You have to decide which way to go. You could wade in, just the four of you, right now, but the next stop after that will be the hospital. That's a promise. That's a cast-iron guarantee. You'll get hit harder than you've ever been hit before. I'm talking broken bones. I can't promise brain damage. Looks like someone already beat me to that." No response. I said, "Or you could attempt a tactical withdrawal now, and then you could take your time putting that big force together. You could come back in a couple of days. Dozens of you. You could find your granddaddy's varmint gun. You could start the painkillers early." No response. Nothing verbal, anyway. But shoulders slumped a fraction and feet started shuffling. "Good decision," I said. "Overwhelming force is always better. You really should go to the Pentagon. You could walk them through your reasoning. They'd listen to you." "They're listening to everyone except us." The alpha dog said, "We'll be back." "I'll be here," I said, "whenever you're ready." They walked away, trying to be casual about it, trying to salvage some dignity. They climbed into their trucks and made a big show of revving their engines and squealing their tires through tight 180 turns. They drove off west into the forest, toward Memphis, toward the rest of the world. I watched them go, and then I walked back to the sheriff's department. Devereaux had seen the whole thing from the window in the dim corner room, like a silent movie. No dialogue. She said,
"You made them go away. You apologized. I can't believe it."
"Not exactly," I said. "I took a rain check. They're coming back later. Dozens of them.
Why did you do that?
More arrests for you? They'll look good for your re-election campaign.
You're crazy.
You want to get lunch now?
I already have a lunch date,
she said. Since when?
5 minutes ago. Major Duncan Monroe called back and asked me to dine with him in the Kellam Officers Club.